Let's start it this way. My hand. I didn't just think of talking of the hand because I was looking at it right now. That would make this look very unprepared, I think. My hand is a body part. Do I get any argument so far? My hand is a body part. It's a part of my body. I don't doubt that. I don't wake up and wonder about it in the morning. I know it. Because it's a body part, it is something I can use. It's here to serve me. And so I use my hand to play the piano. I use my hand to play the guitar. I use my hand to pick things from the shelf. I can use it to nail something in. I can use my hand. I can use it to hold a baby. I use my hand. There's never any doubt from now until my last minute on earth that this hand was here to serve me. And I use it for things. So that's pretty obvious, and kids learn that early. Kids grab at things, and they learn it early, and they continue on with the knowledge that this hand, my body part, is here to serve me. No doubt about it. Now, here's where we go south. My brain is also a body part. Is it not? It's a body part. It's a brain, part of my body. It, too, is here to serve me. It is here to serve me. It is a biological computer designed to serve me. Now, this is a fact that we talk each other out of in our society. We get talked out of this. And pretty soon, at some point in life, this body part called the brain is no longer serving me. In fact, it even turns on me. It is using me. I'm not using it. It's running bad memories, fears. It's running stuff through me that does not serve me, this brain. And so how does that happen? I mean, the hand does not turn on me. I don't walk along and all of a sudden, ah! Doesn't happen, except in, you know, like Peter Sellers or something. Why does the brain turn on me? If the hand doesn't. So, like I said one time before, it starts very early in our culture, in our society. A little girl comes home from school, and the mother says, "You look happy, what happened? You look happy, what happened? What happened? Something good happened to you today? Something nice? Were kids nice to you? Did the teacher give you some cookies? What happened outside of you that you had no control over? What good fortune, what nice thing happened to you that made you happy?" That programming begins early. And if the little girl says, "Nothing happened, I just made myself happy," that's weird to that family. Not around this house you don't do that. We had to send your brother to reform school for that. So we get this programming constantly. So this little girl, later in the day, "You look tired, honey. You want to watch a video?" "I'll put in a video so you can watch it. Put in a video, Snow White, Cinderella." The little girl watches the video, and on the video it says, "Someday my prince will come. Someday my prince will come. Da-da!" So program, program, program. So the little girl is thinking, okay, someday my prince will come. And maybe that will make me... That's obviously where happiness comes from. Some random appearance of some mythological character who is going to make me happy. And so we program this in constantly. Parents keep telling kids this. "You look sad, Mommy." "Well, I know. I've been sad for the last few years, hon. But I just know it's going to change. Something good's going to happen to Mom. Something good will happen. I just feel it. Something's going to happen. Something's coming our way, kids. It'll turn. The world will bring us some happy. I just know it will. Maybe just by standing still, it'll be there." I got a feeling there's a miracle, do. So the whole culture, all the songs, everything we teach from the beginning is that things come from the outside in and you don't have any control. You can't generate your own wealth. You can't generate your own fulfillment. You can't generate, someone has to give it to you. And this is programming, it's training. This is why the brain gets messed up. It gets turned inside out. When I was in psychological warfare in the military, it took them 4 years in psychological warfare. It took them 4 years to teach me to turn it back around, to show me the brain does not work that way. The brain is not just a stimulus response machine where it just reacts and reacts and reacts to stimulus. The brain can create. Children know this intuitively. If you want to sell something, send a child to sell it. They'll sell it right away. If you want to sell some cookies across the street, do not go yourself. You'll be worried about whether they really need it, whether you're being pushy, whether you're, you know, all that, so whether they're really good cookies, whether you can stand for the quality. You sell a kid and they'll sell the cookies. Because children are connected to the proper use of the brain, the inside out. Children demand of the world that it make them happy. Kids insist on having fun. Grown-ups do not. Grown-ups, by that time, have talked themselves out of it. All the programming, all the music, all the TV shows, everything in our culture talks people out of their own power, especially their power to sell, especially their power to connect to other people. It happens throughout childhood, although kids usually resist this message from parents. They usually fight it off. But where it really hits is a little while after that. This is where it really turns for most grown-ups. So when I go in to train companies, 300 people, who aren't connecting with each other, they're not connecting with their customer, they're suspicious of each other, they've got office politics going on, they're underperforming, they're performing at about 10% of what they really could do. And it's because of this. It's because they're living that outside-in life. It's because they've turned it over. What happens in our society? There becomes a point at which people do not return. Picasso said, people said, boy, you're really a natural artist. They'd go up to him and say, you're just a natural, aren't you? You're born artist. And Picasso said, all children are born artists. All children are born artists. What I've done differently is I've remained an artist. That's the difference. And so in companies, when people learn the fundamental life skill, their sales come together, their ability to connect starts to pick up. And that's when things change. There have been 2 books written with the title, Is There Life After High School? Each one concluded no. So, what occurs in high school? Throughout childhood, I use my brain to create with. Children use their brains to create with. They love to create. So, people who are great at selling throughout the day use their brain for creating. Children naturally use their imaginations to create with. They make up names, they make up games, they're creating all the time. Create, create, create. Grown-ups use their brains to react with. They just react, they judge, they evaluate, and react. They judge other people, they judge themselves, they take their emotional temperature throughout the day to see if whether they feel like doing a good job at work or not. Do I feel like doing this work? Do I feel like being great at what I do or not? And so it's reacting all day. Now, when these children get to high school, this brain that's been used properly to create with, all of a sudden, for the final time, gets turned around. If I'm in high school, and now these days junior high, because the kids are growing up faster, for the first time, I care more about what you think of me than I do about what I think of anything. My one concern now is, how do you judge me? What do you think I am? Who am I to you? Am I lovable? Am I cool? Am I not cool? Who am I to you? To all you? What do you people think of me? I remember walking down the street, coming home from high school, freshman year in high school, with a friend of mine. And we were walking down the street, and all of a sudden he stopped, and he went, "Ah!" And I said, "What's wrong?" I thought he had a snake on him or something. And he said, "I missed a loop on my belt. And I've been walking around class all day. And I'd missed a loop. Everybody's looking at it. Nobody said it." I said, "Okay, look, I'm here for you. And you're going to get through this." When I was in high school, what we learned how to do was to be unenthusiastic. That was cool. The enthusiastic kids were not cool. The unenthusiastic kids were the cool. That was the definition of cool. The cool guys in my high school, when they walked through the halls, they were so cool that they didn't even move the air when they walked. Not a molecule of air was even disturbed as the cool guys walked. And there was always kind of a sense, this was back in the 19... Sherry and I actually went to high school the same, you were a lot younger, of course, than I, but the same part of Michigan in the same era. And so we would carry our books in kind of a way that almost looked like we were going to fall from the effort. And the cool guys in our high school were the most unenthusiastic. We idolized cool guys when we went to the movies. In the movies, the most unenthusiastic actors were the ones we wanted to be. James Dean. Everybody wanted to be him in my era. Some of you people are too young to even know these names. So just Marlon Brando. He was the coolest. Brando was so cool that you couldn't even understand him when he spoke. That, talk about don't connect. See, that was their mantra, don't connect, for any reason with anyone. Brando was so cool that he could say something and no one would know what he said. And so the guys in our high school wanted to be like Marlon Brando. So you'd walk up to him in the hall and say, "Hey, Steve, are you going to the dance Friday night?" Wow, is he ever cool. I didn't even know what he said. Do you know what he said? No. Now, what would have not been cool is if you'd come up to me and said, "Hey, Steve, are you going to the dance on Friday night?" "Yeah, I'll be there." "Oh, not around me, you won't." No. No. That is not how you do it. You do not get excited about the dance, dude. We didn't say dude, but we would have if we had known about it. So, this is what occurs in high school. It's a final turn. It's the final flip of the brain. From now on, I will care more about what other people think of me than my own thoughts, my own creations. I will design a personality that's safe, that's least embarrassing to me. I mean, even if I'm a nerd and I can do nerd in a way where I don't get hassled, and it's least embarrassing to me, I'll be nerd. What can I do? What personality can I hide out in that will cause me the least embarrassment? Now, here's the problem. People do not wake up from this self-hypnosis. People stay here. And so now here they are. I go into a board meeting at a Fortune 500 company. I've been hired to help them connect with each other and communicate because they're not. And so I'm sitting like a fly on the wall in the board meeting. And the chairman of the board is talking about the company's numbers. And I can tell when everyone speaks in this board meeting that they're all still in high school. They have not left.
What do you think of the numbers, John?
Everybody is being... You want to crunch these? Do you think we're going to... Everybody is being so cool. There is no enthusiasm in the room. There is no excitement. Excitement is uncool. No enthusiasm is cool. That, especially in male culture, is the coolest way to be. How then do we get people to return to the glory days? William Wordsworth said, when we're born, we enter this world trailing clouds of glory. And if we could get that part of it back, not the childish, the immature part, but that part, the creativity part back, that's when we can sell from here and sell with enthusiasm and really connect. Selling is a very difficult thing to do without enthusiasm. A lot of the work I do is with sales teams, corporations, a number of Fortune 500 corporations, and I work with the sales team. The first thing they ask for is techniques. Do you have techniques for selling? But what's missing when someone's not selling is not technique. What's missing is what everybody in this room has to give and teach. And that's a fundamental life skill. It's a fundamental life skill of connecting with another human being. And that's what's missing. So what companies want is for you to come in and teach people techniques. How to do this, how to do that, how to send emails, how to sell, how to prospect, how to cold call, how to close. And really what's missing underneath all of that is a fundamental life skill, how to connect with another human being, how to, on almost a vibratory level, how to resonate, get on the wavelength of another living being, how to do that. That's what's missing. That's what these people are not able to do. So when I go in, they say, well, why aren't you teaching my people how to do certain things? Why aren't you teaching them techniques? And I say, you must trust me, because what's really missing with your people is this life skill. And if they would learn the life skill, they'd find whatever techniques they needed. The technique will follow. So there are two ways to sell. One way really connects. One way really locks you into the person you're selling to. The other way of selling is the way most people sell. And when I'm talking about selling here, selling really has a bad name in our culture. Death of a salesman was not a celebration of the selling profession. In fact, when I wrote The Joy of Selling, in some sales teams I go into and they get it as a text for what I teach. The Joy of Selling is about the life skill we're going to talk about. There's no technique for selling in there. But when I wrote it, a lot of people, when they see the title, they laugh bitterly. You know, like, you know, Richard Burton and Virginia Woolf laughing out on the lawn. It's just a bitter laugh. Like, how could there be a joy of selling? It would be what kind of a twisted being are you to give it that title? Obviously, the book's ironic. So the joy of selling really is the answer. That is the life skill. That is the life skill inside of selling. So there's two ways to sell, because there's two ways to connect with other human beings. And I want to have selling be connection, have it be synonymous. And really, when you really get great at selling, there's no difference between your selling and whatever else you do when you connect. There isn't a distinction called selling in your life. It's part of the rest of what you do. I can sell without enthusiasm. That's one way. Or I can sell with enthusiasm, and that's the other way. And I have to remind myself before I get on the phone or sell somebody something that this is fundamental. This lives at the level of choice, and I want to make this choice prior to the communication, prior to the connection with that other person. I want to make the choice first, so I'm coming from here. And it doesn't have to be real. It doesn't have to be authentic. I mean, one can fake it until one makes it. But where it does have to be authentic is in the part where I enroll myself in the value of the product. That has to be apart from any conversation I have at all. So I can sell with enthusiasm, I can sell without enthusiasm. Everybody sells something throughout the day. We're going to use sales in that context. You all have all kinds of professions here. So those of you who don't, quote, sell, I'm asking you not to tune out, because you do sell. And I'm using sell to mean connect. I'm using sell to mean to enroll someone in your enthusiasm about anything. If you're a lawyer, a doctor, anybody, you are enrolling people at some point throughout the day in your enthusiasm for something. If you're a mother, you're selling your child on the idea of cleaning a room. I don't mean to name the toughest known sell, but I might as well put it out here. So there's always something being sold, and I'm using sales in the most positive sense. The minute I allow it to flip over to the negative, I'm in real trouble. So I want to do this ladder that I've brought out a couple of times, and I want to now make it the sales ladder. Two human beings, you and the person you're selling to. Here's you, and here's somebody. Now this could be anybody. This could be my spouse, and I'm selling her on an idea. I'm trying to get Kathy to see that it's a good idea to spend our savings on going to the Super Bowl. It could be any situation. You can be any profession, unless you're the Unabomber, who didn't have a Rolodex, let's just put it that way. Lived in kind of a cave or whatever. You connect for a living in some way. So the way that really works and the way that really has people sell or create agreements or anything they want to do is to sell from up here, from the highest level of consciousness, not the lowest. So again, I'll distinguish levels of consciousness. At the very low end is, we'll just put death down here. If you're trying to sell to someone who has expired, that's a tough sell. I mean, it's a very difficult sale, because that person really, in a certain sense, can't hear you. Now, if you're selling to someone who has, there is a way to do it. I have a seminar in it. But it's a very narrow field, and it's a very unique seminar. It's very expensive. I call it the Lazarus effect. And you can see me about it afterwards if you want to bring your checkbook. Now let's just step up. Now, here's a person I'm selling to here. Let's say they are still alive. The lowest place they can be on this consciousness level, the least receptive they can be to me. Now, this can be me talking to my child, me talking to my brother, anybody. The least receptive a person can be to any kind of agreement I'm trying to get them to make with me is down here. Most people in our culture fear selling. They fear being sold because they are so oversold. We see about 2,000 sales messages a day in our culture. We just see it everywhere. We hear them coming off the radio. We see it on bus benches, on the side of buses. It's just everywhere throughout the day. Telemarketing, we're just being sold constantly. So in our society, sales resistance is tremendous. It used to be there wasn't that much sales resistance. So when we were sold things, it felt like a unique experience. Someone would call, and it would be like, someone's calling to talk to me. At the end, we'd have these steak knives in our house, and there'd be a Vegematic, and people would come home and say, well, look, it dices and it slices. But after a while, it's just like the first hint of a sales conversation, boom, there's sales resistance. And we have people with integrity, impeccable integrity, will throw it away if they feel they're being sold something. They will walk into a store and they will be looking very hard for something very specific. And someone will aggressively walk up to them and say, "Can I help you?" And they will say, "No, no, I don't need any help. I'm just looking. Anything specific you're looking for? No." And they will lie and not even care about it. This sales resistance is really high. There is fear of being sold, and we pick up on it when we talk to people that we're trying to enroll in some idea we try to sell. And this fear makes me afraid. So there's fear in the other person that you're selling to. There can be anger that shows up like testiness and just, I don't return your calls. I'm not going to call you back. That's sort of a passive-aggressive way of getting back at you. There's fear, there's anger. And still down here in the very low vibratory levels of human consciousness, there's fear, there's anger, there's resentment. Now, some employees that I work with in companies, they've tuned in here. And this is where they come from. This is their operating source. They come from resentment. Resentment is their level of vibration. They resent everything. The nicer the boss is, the more they resent them. They resent everything. They say, "We're sending you on a trip to Maui, company vacation." "Oh, yeah, but what kind of a hotel are they going to put us in?" They would resent anything that you gave to them. So that's here, resentment. One thing I have to keep in mind, it's over in me, too. I've got to watch where this is in me, as well as the person I'm selling. There's worry. This person worries all the time. And there's worry in me. Now, if I'm worried about not selling what I'm trying to sell, my vibration level is picked up on. People get on my wavelength, and it pushes them down. And they might have been neutral, now they're worried. They're worried that I'm worried. They feel the neediness. A sense of need is the very worst place to come from if you're selling anybody anything. It's the creepiest. Need is the ultimate creep out in human connection. If you don't believe this, and there's somebody you're trying to sell something, and you've got a fairly good relationship going on, and you really want to end it just for as an experiment, try this. Call them and leave this message on their voicemail: "I need you." And hang up. They will not call you back. We put stalkers in jail because they have too much of this. This is the deal killer, this sense of need. Because in the person you're selling to, there's a subconscious evaluation going on. And if they believe you need this more than they do, they will sense that. And anytime I sense you need this more than I do, my guard goes up. Like, okay, it feels to me like I'm not getting a deal here. It feels to me like I'm being taken advantage of. And the way they will respond to that feeling is, "Let me get back to you. I'm going to have to talk to somebody. I got to talk to my partner. I'm going to run this past the committee. I got to run it past the committee." You know, there's some cultures where they have no word for no, but they just say, "I got to run this past the committee." This is where I don't want to come from. And this is where I don't want the person I'm connecting with to be. So I've got two jobs when I sell. Job one is to learn the fundamental life skill of coming from here. I want to sell from the spirit. I do not want to sell from my need, from my fear of not having money, from my worry, from my resentment of other people who have more money than I do. I don't want to sell from here. It's not effective. It won't work. A lot of times people see this and they say, "Well, why would anybody do that?" And I can tell you, 9 out of 10 salespeople do this throughout the day. And they can't figure out what's wrong. And you know what their company does? "Oh, you need sales training. You need techniques. You need scripts. You need this." And so you put a technique on this, you put a script on this. Now I'm a worried man with a good script. And so what you hear in my script is how worried I am. So step one, I want to be here when I meet up with you. The fundamental life skill at play in connecting with other human beings is to learn to come from here. In our society, that doesn't make sense. Our society teaches you that you can't be up here where you're feeling compassion, humor, imagination. You can't be up here where you've got all these things going for you. Creativity, profound creativity, intuition. Our society teaches you can't be in this state. You know, some people just call this a good mood, good spirits. That's okay. It doesn't have to be complicated. But you can't be in this state unless something good has happened to you, or unless you're already feeling it. And people who become great at sales, people who become good at presenting, any field that requires, to be truly great at it, requires a level of mastery that must be reached, have to learn job one, learn the first life skill, and that is to take full responsibility for my own energy level. I take full responsibility for my energy level at this moment, or I will not choose to use this moment to connect with you. Now, that's not always a luxury or an option. If you look at it in the field of acting, actors learn to do this. I mean, Meryl Streep would not say, if she was on Broadway, she wouldn't go to the stage manager and say, "Hey, don't raise the curtain yet, because I play a character who's really joyful and really excited to see someone, and I don't feel that yet. So I'll let you know. I'll let you know when I'm feeling that way." She would not do that. She could have had the worst month, the worst day, the worst of everything in her life, and known that what was required of her was to generate that and have it be real inside of her when that curtain went up. Now, I don't want to just have Meryl Streep be able to do that. I want everybody in every company in America to know that they too can do that. Why should it just be actors or great athletes who get coached in sports psychology who learn to do that? Who learn to generate their own energy level at will? Why should they be the ones? Well, because we depend on them to entertain us. So I would hope they would learn it. So step one is here. I want to be able to do this for myself. Step two in connecting is to be totally 100% aware of where the person I'm talking to is and what I can do to alleviate this and let them float up so they are up here with me. Compassion, trust, total trust, relaxation, love, intuition, and put spirit at the top. I want them here. So when two people are here, that's ideal, that's perfect, that's wonderful. Two people excited, two people really on the same wavelength. Now, how does this work inside companies, inside groups? I don't remember if I told you the story of this guy. His name was Dave, and he was a list of complaints. So he lived down here, and he had all kinds of complaints, even though his company treated him very well. His company was a copying company in Phoenix. But Dave had grievances and complaints, and so when I went into work with Dave, he read me this list, and Dave was about to meet with his own company president, and they were going to have their meeting where they planned their goals for the year. And Dave said, "I dread going into that meeting." And I said, "Why?" "Well, whenever I meet with Jeff, he thinks I'm a complainer and a whiner, and I never get what I want." I said, "Okay, so let's look at what you want to talk about in your meeting with him." Well, I don't even want to talk about it because I won't get it. I won't get it resolved. I said, well, let's look at it. Well, here's the thing. When leads come into the front desk, they never go to me. They never give them to me. Okay, let's write that down. What else? Well, also, he gave me this territory to sell in, and it's just this little narrow territory north, and there aren't many businesses there. And if I could just move a little bit west, there's nobody selling over there, but he won't give that to me. All right, let's write that down. Dave had about 9 things. And I said, good, so let's have you go into Jeff, your boss, and let's get these things for you. And he said, oh, it'll never happen. Because I've been going into him about this stuff for years. I keep going in and telling him, hey, I said, well, what do you say? Well, I say, Jeff, this is unfair. This is not fair, Jeff. Other people get a bigger territory than this. I said, okay, so let me tell you something about communicating with a manager, communicating with someone higher up in the organization. If you ever approach them from unfair, you're in trouble. You're going to have a hard time getting what you want because they will become defensive. No one likes to be called unfair. Even a good father at the kitchen table pouring chocolate milk for the children. Stephanie gets hers and Bobby gets his and Bobby says, hey, Dad, Stephanie got more than me. That's not fair, Dad. You're not fair. Even a good, loving father will get defensive. He will say, well, Stephanie came to the table on time.
Dad!
And? You got chocolate milk yesterday, and Stephanie got none, so you're lucky to have any. So the appeal on the grounds of unfair doesn't work, and there's a reason it doesn't work, is because the person's coming from down here. And where they want to come from is here, from the spirit. In a strange way, although I don't say this to business people in the first meeting because they blush and get all weird, the way to really have it happen is to love Jeff, is to feel some love for Jeff. That's really how this all works.
When you are saying spirit, coming from selling from a place of spirit, is that from a place of being of service? Is it from being your authentic self? Can you share more about that?
Well, what I'm talking about is, in the most common terms, good spirits. I'm coming from good spirits. I'm coming from being in a good mood. I'm coming from being lighthearted. And I'm coming from an enthusiastic sense of really enjoying. I'm coming from joy. I'm enjoying the idea of the two of us reaching an agreement on something. I can get myself there by thinking of what a service this will be for the person. I'm going to talk about how to get here, but it can be any of that. I just want to be that when I'm talking to the person, instead of being, that's unfair, you haven't been fair to me, because that will cause this. See, what happens if I come from here with another human being, we get into a weird game of pong. If I'm angry, you're scared. Now you convert your fear to anger. Now you're mad at me because I made you scared. And this stuff happens down here. Nothing good ever comes from that. So I want to come up here, lighthearted, good spirits. So what I told Dave was, let's take every one of these grievances of yours, every one of these complaints, and let's convert them into something that Jeff will want to hear. And Dave said, Jeff doesn't want to hear these complaints. Jeff thinks I'm a complainer. He thinks I'm a whiner. He thinks I'm a victim and a loser. And I said, well, I know that you probably think that's a negative evaluation of you, but Jeff has a point. Because you complain. Yes, but I'm justified. Yes, you are. See, his grievances were justified. But his presentation of the grievances was threatening to Jeff, as they would be to any human being. So here's what Dave did. He wanted a better territory. First thing I asked, what does Jeff want, Dave? What do you think Jeff wants? There's one really good slogan to use when you're selling, and it's from an old barbershop quartet song. You tell me your dream, and I'll tell you mine. Anyone remember that song?
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to ask somebody else to sing it. Does anybody else remember? You tell me. Anybody remember it? Lily? Okay. There's an old barbershop quartet song. Does anybody know that this is... Am I just making this up? This is true. Is it? Do you know it's true? There's... You tell me your dream, I'll tell you mine. That's all you have to remember. So I said, let's apply you tell me your dream, I'll tell you mine to Jeff. He's a human being. He's not just the manager. Most people come to work to be reparented. Well, my parents didn't get it right. I hope my manager does. So far, she's not doing a very good job. Jeff wants more sales. I said, what does Jeff want? He wants more sales. He gets commissioned when the whole company sells more. That's when he gets his bonus. Good. He wants more sales out of his team, correct? Yes. If you had a bigger territory, would you be able to give Jeff more sales? Well, yes, I would. Okay, great. Let's put that in that category. And he went through each grievance. When he went into Jeff, he said, Jeff, I've got some ideas I want to run past you. Number one, I have a way that if we do it, I know would get this company and this team more sales. And Jeff looked at him and said, oh, really, Dave? This is not like you. What is this idea? If my territory, which is here, is out to here, and I'm selling $24,000 a month with this, I could get at least to $40,000 out here if I had this part. My request of you is you consider giving this and let me show you what I can do. You know what Jeff said? Done. You got it. Now, the leads that come into the front desk, right now none of them are going to me. All I want is my fair share. If you tell the front desk receptionist to give 1 out of every 10 leads to me, I'll convert them for you and give you more sales. You know what Jeff said?
Done.
He went through every grievance that he had never gotten before, ever. And the way he got these requests met, he put them in Jeff's world. Every sale takes place in the customer's world. It does not take place in my world. Every sale that was ever made, every agreement that was ever agreed to, anyone who's ever been convinced of something, that moment of being convinced occurred in their world. If I'm unwilling to travel to their world and live in their world, not mine, it won't happen. Sale won't happen. Did I see a hand in the back?
I was wondering if you had tips on acting. If I'm going to act lighthearted, enthusiastic, and all that kind of thing. Well, I'm not feeling like it, so tips there would be appreciated.
No, this is just, these are just, what are you guys laughing at? These are just letters I use to remind me. How do I get myself in the spirit? Use any technique you want. You can laugh to get yourself in the spirit. Zen monks used to do laughing meditation. And what they wanted to show people is what we're talking about today. The primary life skill is to generate your own energy anywhere you want it to be. That's the primary life skill that we talk our children out of. When I teach life skills, that's it. That's the life skill. Generate whatever level of energy you want to generate at any given moment, not dependent on anything around you, whether you're in a fair work situation or anything. I want to learn to come from here. The Zen monks want to teach that primary life skill, so they do it by doing the laughing meditation. And all the rookie monks sit in out there, and the head monk, my terminology is not perfect here, the head monk hits a gong, and they have to laugh. Not wait until they feel like laughing. They laugh, and they have to laugh until they hear the gong again. And he walks out with a switch. And if someone's not laughing, it is the laughing meditation. There you go. So he allows this laughter to go for a while, and pretty soon it's real. And it started as faked. Believe me, when they saw the switch, they were all laughing. Ha 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 ha. But it got real. After a while, it crossed the line to real. If you fake anything long enough, it gets real. So it crossed into the territory of real laughter. So when it's real, he hits the gong and he yells stop, and it's hard for them to stop. We can't stop. Then what he says to them, you're all very happy right now. You weren't laughing because you were happy. You're happy because you were laughing. And that's the message. And he wants them to see, if you only get that message, all our work is fulfilled. William James, the American psychologist, said, we don't sing because we're happy. We're happy because we sing.